been exactly 6 weeks since a Wayne County woman went missing. Jeanette Ciarmello vanished from the home she shared with her boyfriend in Clyde on November 27th.
A disappearance, the sergeant tells me, is now considered to be suspicious.
And what officers in charge of the case think happened to her?
Somebody has to know something. Somebody just needs to come forward.
The smallest detail could be what it takes to blow this case open.
On November 27th, 2018, 31-year-old Jeanette Ciarmello disappeared from her home in the small town of Clyde in upstate New York. She had no vehicle, no phone, no wallet, and not a single person living nearby in her quiet and friendly neighborhood witnessed her coming or going. Four years have passed since that day, but the investigation seems to have hit a dead end, with no updates from law enforcement on whether they are any closer to finding her than they were on the day she went missing. It's as if she vanished into thin air. But while it may seem that way on the surface, a trace can always be found if the investigation digs deep enough. Someone must know something, right? My name is Amanda Vreeland, host of Unconvicted. This is the investigation into the disappearance of Jeanette Ciarmello. Please be aware that this episode contains content that may be alarming or triggering to some listeners. Please check the show notes for more details and resources, and take care of yourself. The internet was a very different place 10 years ago. In May of 2012, I was a senior in high school getting ready to graduate. One day, after school let out, I remember my friends and I hanging around in the parking lot by my truck while we waited for the bus line to clear, when one of my buddies, who had been scrolling on his phone, suddenly burst out laughing. When he realized that he had clearly captured our attention, he flipped his phone around to show us his screen and, at the same time, yelled,
"Barack Obama is on Twitter. The freaking president of the United States has a Twitter account."
What a time to be alive, right? Fast forward 10 years to today, and presidents, politicians, government agencies, and the leaders of nations all across the globe not only have Twitter, but use it as their first and most important line of direct communication with the public. This is only one of the many examples that can be made to show how much the internet has changed over time and how it continues to change rapidly. Our society now relies almost entirely on network connectivity to function. I'm only 28 years old, and if you are at least as old as I am, then I bet you probably remember the old saying, "Don't believe everything you read on the internet." I definitely remember it, and I also remember believing it. Actually, for my generation, it wasn't just a saying. It was kind of a rule. I remember back in my high school English class, when we were beginning to learn about writing research papers, my teacher would constantly have to remind us what types of content we could and could not use as sources for our research. Pretty much anything found on the internet was a big fat no. Why? Because so much of what lives on the internet cannot be trusted and will rarely ever provide proof of its credibility. So, yeah, that makes sense to me. Anyone can say anything they want on the internet. So of course it wasn't surprising at all that this was off limits. What absolutely does surprise me, though, is how quickly the entire planet appears to have forgotten about this and now looks straight to the internet for the truth, on social media platforms, no less. Meanwhile, the internet has only become more questionable as it's grown to become cluttered, dark, and even dangerous. Like I mentioned in episode 1, The internet plays a very double-sided role in Jeanette's case, and many other cases too. The exposure alone can be a great thing for a case like hers, but what comes with that exposure could just as easily send a case backpedaling to the starting line, because remember, you can't believe everything you read on the internet. A shining example, and the primary host of that tug-of-war battle between helpful and hoaxful, comes from an online community of different people all across the globe. These people either have skills or interests, maybe even obsessions, that lead them to gravitate towards mysterious true crime events, most often the ones still unsolved and cold as ice. The people that make up this internet-based community have been dubbed as web sleuths or internet detectives, those who analyze real crimes and mysteries all from the comfort of their Wi-Fi. Today, many of these online investigations happen over platforms like TikTok, YouTube, and Reddit, but online sleuthing is by no means a new concept. In fact, one of the most dedicated platforms to the cause is a forum accurately titled WebSleuths.com that was launched in 1999 to give ordinary people a place to discuss and classify information related to crimes, trials, and unsolved cases, which they also try to solve. Sadly, though, not every digital detective has the best interest in mind of the victims and their families. Some are in it for the wrong reasons and will spread lies and conspiracy theories about a case just to throw it off an investigation, or they will share opinions unsupported by research or evidence, further muddying the waters for those trying to find the truth. Unfortunately, I think the world has come to realize that the internet is like a playground for bad people to say cruel and insensitive things due to the anonymity of it. While some of these online communities are indeed crawling with trolls eager to offer their quick judgments and suspicions, one thing that is hard to deny is that it does at least offer a platform for underreported cases to generate some recognition. And yes, there has even been a handful of occasions where the collaborative efforts of these online detectives made a huge impact in solving real crimes. One of the biggest and most recent examples of their success was the Gabby Petito case. Petito herself was an online influencer and had been documenting a cross-country trip she was on with her fiancé, Brian Laundrie, on her social media accounts. That collection of pictures and videos of them on their trip gave sleuths a library of content to work with for pinpointing her last movements and learning more about her final days. Petito was found to have been murdered by her fiancé 11 days after being reported missing. Without the huge community of internet detectives dissecting the details of her case, talking about it, sharing it, it's hard to say whether or not police would have ever found Gabby's body. It's at least very likely that if they had, it wouldn't have been nearly as soon after she was reported missing. While I was continuously doing research online into Jeanette's case, hoping some new shred of information would appear, I scrolled past an unfamiliar result that caught my eye. It was a post made on the Web Sleuths forum site under the forum titled "Missing But Not Forgotten." I definitely hadn't noticed it before, so I went on to check it out. The thread was started not very long at all after her disappearance, not even a month. The first handful of posts were just copy and pastes from the few local news stories that covered her case when it was fresh, and then other users began chiming in on some of the details that seemed off to them. For example, wondering why Marcus waited the 2 days to report her missing, which we now know was at the suggestion of law enforcement. P.S., just saying this again in case anyone forgot, waiting to file a police report after someone goes missing is not a thing. Don't do it. Don't leave the police station until you have one in hand, and if it really gets that difficult, go to another station. Anyways, another detail that was discussed by the forum users was the curiosity about what was in Jeanette's past that Marcus mentioned to the media that she may have been trying to escape from. One user went as far as to uncover two previous arrest charges for Jeanette, one for shoplifting in Tennessee and another unknown charge in Catoosa County, Georgia. Both charges were before 2012, and from the records I could find, both were also minimal enough for her to be released the same day. As I continued down the thread of comments, my thoughts bounced back and forth, from relief that there were others taking notice in her case, raising the same concerns that I had, to frustration over the fact that I was learning more about her case at that moment from an online armchair detective group than I had in my attempts at speaking with law enforcement at that point. I read on, taking notes of all the possible leads that had been pointed out in the thread in hopes of following up on them all later. Nearing the end of the thread was a post linking to a page for Jeanette Sierra-Mella on a site called NAMIS, the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. I was surprised to see this, as I had actually checked that site multiple times since beginning my research, being previously familiar with it. The National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, NAMIS, is a national information clearinghouse and resource center for missing, unidentified, and unclaimed person cases across the United States. NAMIS describes their purpose as aiding in the nation's silent mass disaster. This is a clip from their page of the director with the National Institute of Justice, David Mulhausen, describing the problem our nation faces that NAMIS intends to help solve. You can find the full video and more about NAMIS in the show notes for this episode.
On any given day, thousands of missing person cases are on file with law enforcement agencies across America. More than 600,000 individuals go missing in the United States every year. Tens of thousands of these cases become cold cases, where an individual remains missing for more than 12 months. Every year, American law enforcement recovers 4,400 unidentified bodies and about 1,000 remain cold cases. The criminal justice community works hard to resolve these cases and never forgets their human element. But the sheer volume of missing and unidentified persons cases has become one of the greatest challenges that agencies face.
So it was created to act in WAIS as a database for missing persons, as well as unidentified bodies found in the U.S. One of the goals in having these cases together in one system is to hopefully make connections between them by matching the John and Jane Does found to the descriptions of missing persons, allowing them to identify more of these nameless individuals, thus the name of the program being NAMIS, like Name Us. Jeanette's page listed her physical description and when she was last seen and reported missing. It also described in more detail what she was believed to be wearing at the time of her disappearance. A black ski jacket, maroon dress shirt, floral blue leggings, and dangling earrings. What ended up being the most helpful detail listed for me was under the contacts provided for her case. The investigating agency listed was the Wayne County Sheriff's Office, but it also provided the agency case number and case owner, Detective Lieutenant Kevin Kuntz. Finally, a name of someone in law enforcement who might know something, anything, about her case and where the investigation stands. I'll be honest, after emailing, messaging, sending letters, and calling, and calling, and calling persistently for what felt like an eternity to every channel of law enforcement I could find in the Wayne County area with still no response or info from anyone involved with Jeanette's case, I was a little doubtful that reaching out to Detective Kuntz would be any different. But I did anyway, of course. I left a message for him on December 10th, 2021.
Sorry.
Detective Sergeant Kevin Kuntz.
Is not available. Record your message at the tone. When you are finished, hang up or press pound for more options.
And just as my hope began to fade, I finally hear back. I spoke with Detective Kevin Kuntz for the first time on December 21st, 2021. Our first conversation was not too unlike the few brief ones I've had with other officers during previous attempts to get more information. But the biggest difference was that this officer at least cared enough to follow up with me again after the first conversation. Detective Kuntz was somewhat familiar with the general details, but not as much as I'd hoped during that first conversation. Although being listed as the case owner on the NamUs page, Kuntz revealed that there technically wasn't anyone specifically assigned to the case at that time. I had a massive list of questions and wasted no time unloading them.
Been a busy couple weeks here with some other cases and stuff, so...
Yeah, absolutely.
Unfortunately, and you know, we bring up every couple weeks or months, you know, that we wish we had more time to look into her case, you know, because there's definitely some stuff we can further look into. But again, a lot of it hinges on locating her, because that could give us some indication about maybe who was involved. And
we haven't gotten a whole lot of, any updated information or leads per se. We have a few people we have looked at from the outset, who, you know, we continue to kind of keep tabs on, but we have nothing, nothing new that's coming in to have diverted us in any different direction.
Nothing new coming in. No new leads, no movement, no answers. Unfortunately, I figured that was the response I'd get, but I still hoped to hear otherwise after asking about where the investigation stood. I pressed further, asking if he could tell me what, if anything at all, was being done to investigate her case.
Obviously, the one main thing is trying to locate, you know, where she is, whether it's if she is deceased, you know, locating her remains, or which could fill us in on, you know, who was involved based on that. Or obviously, you know, best case scenario, obviously, if she for some reason is out there under a different name or, you know, left on her own terms. You know, we're treating it as likely, you know, that she's no longer alive, but kind of had to do that just to, without any further information leading us to believe that she is, you know, still alive. We kind of got to treat it as such, so.
The hard data for exactly what percentage of missing person cases result in finding the person deceased was all over the board from what I could find in my research, especially for the state of New York. But what does appear to be consistent is how often law enforcement will continue to actively investigate a missing person case with the assumption that they are still alive after about a month. Unless it is a child, and often even then, investigating agencies often shift their perspectives on missing person cases as more time passes from "this is a rescue mission" to "this is a search for remains." But not every case is the same, so there is always room for hope. Always. I just wonder if Jeanette was ever truly given the rescue mission she deserved when she was first reported missing.
Okay, so, does essentially that mean that pretty much from the beginning there really hasn't been anything to move forward on?
Yeah, we continue to, utilize, some technology, I could say, I guess, to try to, track where she might have been. I can't get into too many specifics on that, but some of the technology that's available, through, social media, that kind of stuff that she may have used, or other people may have used. So, like I said, we have a few people that we've could have been involved in her disappearance that we've kind of been, to the best we've been able to, keep tabs on them and try to look into, their whereabouts, obviously, on the day she went missing, time frame she was last seen.
It's probably safe to assume that Marcus's iPad, the one Jeanette had when she left the home that day, was included in those technologies he was referring to. But I still wondered what exactly they were doing to look into it, especially if no one was actively assigned to her case.
Well, like I said, the main thing is without locating her, or her remains, it's obviously a huge obstacle.
difficult for us to kind of overcome at this point.
Okay. Just from talking to Marcus, him mentioning that the iPad that was technically his was really the only source of, you know, communication that she had at the time. And that was what she was using to communicate with anyone she was with. And he mentioned specifically Facebook Messenger being all that he was aware of as far as how she would be communicating with those people. So yeah, that was going to be one of my questions, if you guys had pursued or were in the process of pursuing.
Yeah, there's definitely, there's some avenues that we utilize to, try to obtain, different, whether it's, cellular information or, Wi-Fi usage, obviously, with a, iPad or something like that. Sometimes we don't get information, depends on, if the device was on or off, that type of thing. But we're still, we are still, waiting on some information as far as that goes. Like you said, some of it's just a waiting game as far as, what the providers, whether it's, Google or phone companies can provide us, and wait to see what they can access.
Okay. So you said the Facebook is being pursued?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
the Facebook logs, of her basic activity or access to her account logs?
Yes, that's something that we've looked into, but we're still waiting on some stuff on that.
Okay. Were you guys able to ever determine, a last time for when the Wi-Fi was connected to the iPod?
And I don't know without looking at the all the case material on it. I'm not positive if we have that or not. That's something I'd have to look up. But
okay, would it be something that you would be able to provide if you were able to look up that information?
That's a possibility. Yeah, I could check into that. See, you're basically wondering when the last time that was being used as for any kind of communication.
Yeah, or when the last known connection was. And so going off of, the way that Wi-Fi connections, or if you have a certain service provider, most of the time they'll provide you either a portal or an app, and you can kind of see the devices listed on your network. And that was one of the things discussed with Marcus, if he was able to access that being the account owner, to see when the actual last time of connection was.
Right.
Obviously, there's not always a guarantee that that's entirely accurate, but it would maybe at least be helpful as far as the window of time in which she left the home.
Did he mention any of that as far as if he tried to do that, or?
He said he hadn't looked into it and had assumed that the investigation would be addressing it.
And I haven't been involved in that aspect of it, so I'd have to check in to see, the people that are working on that.
Okay.
What they've gotten so far and everything, but.
So it was somewhat reassuring to hear that they had a few potential suspects they were keeping tabs on. Some missing person cases don't even get that far. I thought back to the article about Elijah Jenkins and Amber Miller, the two people arrested back in February of 2019 for kidnapping a woman. It mentioned that police were investigating whether there was a connection between them and Jeanette's disappearance. This was the first and only thing mentioned in the media even remotely close to naming who might be on police's radar for her case. So I asked Detective Kuntz if he could shed some light there.
Okay, and then so you said obviously there's certain people that you guys are looking into. Does that mean that an actual person of interest has been named or no?
We can't get those names out at this point because just for investigative purposes. But there's a few people that we've talked to, and a few people that we've had, certainly you could look at as people of interest. That had contact with her during that time frame we know to be the last time she had been seen or heard from. There were a few people that contacted her on that day. Can't get into much more than that, but she did have contact with a few people on the last day. She was known to be, have contact with anybody.
So, publicly speaking, I would say that there technically is no person of interest publicly. Is that right?
Uh,
Correct. Yeah. No one that we've, certainly that we're gonna, put out there as far as, we think this person, and that's more so just because, we don't want to draw attention to something or to that person's attention that, when we haven't completed our investigation, or we don't want them to know too much. People we looked at or, were kind of involved in the same type of stuff, and, we never had anything to, link that person to this case, obviously. I can never rule out anybody, but, she had, Jeanette had a, lifestyle that put her into contact with some people that aren't necessarily the best people, and,
Detective Kuntz went on to explain how some of the people Jeanette associated with may have contributed to her going missing due to some of the things they were involved in, aka the drug use. He says it's not uncommon for someone involved with the drug trade and the individuals in that crowd to fall victim to kidnapping, especially women, he explains, due to getting themselves in vulnerable positions where they are taken advantage of and held against their will. Referencing the woman kidnapped by Elijah Jenkins and Amber Miller as an example of that type of situation. He said that general crowd, or things related to those types of activities, are where most of the leads on Jeanette's case have pointed to. But he also says that there isn't anything necessarily proving that anyone within that crowd was involved either. So, one step forward, one step back. While he was explaining these possible leads in connection to Jeanette's lifestyle choices, I felt myself cringe. I wanted to defend her. For what? And why? Was it just the grouping of female and vulnerable in the same sentence that irked me? I didn't know Jeanette personally, and surely don't know what role her lifestyle decisions may or may not have played in her disappearance. But then, an old riddle popped into my head. If a tree falls in the forest with no one around to hear it, does it make a sound? I took an ethics class in college, and our professor made us openly debate this riddle for two long, painful weeks. It was torn apart from all angles. Science, nature, religion, you name it. By the end of the debate, I had had enough. The tree fell. And the English definition of the word sound should probably be revised a tad for clarity. The end. Reflecting on that riddle and the heated debate it caused helped me to realize why I felt the urge to defend Jeanette. The tree fell. That's it. Jeanette's choices may or may not have had something to do with the cause of her disappearance, but her choices should not be ethically tainting the lens on the magnifying glass of those who could and should be working to find her. We're all human, and we all deserve to be found no matter what the cause. The tree fell, and Jeanette is missing. That's it. My next question for Detective Kuntz was about the property search conducted on Bloom Road. What exactly led them to conduct that search there? And what about her car? Marcus was told by Clyde PD, after confronting them about her car being parked in the fire hall, that it was found on that property. But the media reported that nothing was found during that property search. So what really happened with that?
Yeah, from the news articles about it and from the follow-up of the search, it said that it was from a tip. That's how they were led there to search that property, was from an anonymous tip. And Marcus had actually told me that he was essentially the one that made the tip about that property, because he said she had told him when she was still there that if anything ever happened to her, to search this property specifically. you know, somewhere that she knew potentially, whether it would be from something she was doing. So, again, all that I can see from the news and the media reporting on the results of that property search were that nothing was found, no further information was collected as far as finding her or looking for her. But Marcus, he had been told somehow and made aware of the fact that her car was found during the property search. So I was wondering if you can confirm whether or not that is true based off of, you know, the media reporting.
That I don't, as far as I know, and to be honest, I have to look back and see what information we had on her car. Just off the top of my head, if I were to guess, just based on the last time I was kind of going over this whole case, I don't know that we had information on her car. So he's saying her car is still missing?
So what he said was that he was told that the car was found on the property. He so much also knew where the car currently was, and he was able to actually point me in the direction of where the law enforcement ended up moving her car to. And so after my interview with him, I actually drove over there just to verify what he said, and I took pictures as well of the car because it was playing out in open sight based off of his description of what the car looked like. Later on, when I spoke with Kevin, again, this was about a year and a half difference time, I was able to also verify with Kevin the description of the car and confirm that it was definitely her vehicle, but he was never made aware that it was found.
Okay. Again, I have to look at, and obviously if it was found, you know, prior to us getting involved, we wouldn't have been looking for it at that point, but that's something certainly, I'd have to look back and talk with the other detectives here to find out, you know, the circumstances on that, but that's something we could definitely look into and, again, see what the circumstances of that are, if that was found during that search, and if something hasn't been done as far as, you know, stuff that could be done on the vehicle, that's certainly, I could definitely look into.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't have too much knowledge of the car. I definitely didn't have any knowledge of the car, because I have to think back, it's been a while since we've had, you know, like I said, active stuff we were looking at, so I'd have to review the whole thing, kind of see the timeline and, in relation to her vehicle, but.
Okay.
I then nervously moved on to the subject of Neil Fuller, the older gentleman that Jeanette had plans to help out that day. Nervously, because as Marcus and Kevin had both shared with me when discussing Jeanette's former neighbor, he once held a high position of authority in the criminal justice system as a town judge, and not knowing much at that point about him or what his side of the story was about the day she disappeared, I made sure to tread lightly when bringing him up. I told Kuntz everything I was told about who Neil was and what his plans were with Jeanette that day, according to others. I asked Detective Kuntz if he could give me any more information about him.
Does the name sound familiar? Can you give me any information about him?
Yeah, I can't say too much on that, but I would say that, you know, you have some accurate information. You know, we have talked to that person. Again, there's that individual has been talked to, as well as at least one other person. But certainly, there's the story that she gave, you know, the boyfriend, and then there's speculation, of course, like you mentioned, you know, what sort of payments, you know, was she getting? Was it a actual, you know, the relationship that she's stating to him that it was, is that be accurate, or is there something else going on? You know, that's something we, you know, continue to look at in relation to that individual. But I can't get into really more, too much more on that.
Is that true that he was a former judge?
I guess, to information I have, yes. And again, it's more, he would be, continue to be a person of interest, as opposed to the other individual that was more, you know, unsubstantiated rumors. The others, I would say this other person is, you know, definitely someone who had contact with her, you know, one of the last people that had contact with her. So certainly, you know, there's like I said earlier, there's a few people that had contact with her on the last day we know she, you know, was alive, or had contact with, you know, anyone who could say, yes, I spoke to her today or I saw her today type of deal. Yeah, there's more than one person, and we've spoken to both those people, and you know, I we couldn't certainly rule out anybody at this point. I guess that's all I can really say as regards to that goes. But you know, we've talked to, like I said, both those people, and you know, they've given their version of what their contact with her was that day, and we really can't. Obviously, anybody who had contact with her, you know, on the last day she's seen would be a person of interest. Doesn't mean they're a suspect necessarily, but just, you know, someone that we certainly are aware of and continue to look at as a potential person that could be involved, you know.
Okay.
I told Detective Koontz about what Kevin Scarborough had shared with me in our conversation, that someone had reached out to him via Facebook Messenger claiming they overheard Elijah talking about how Jeanette had overdosed while with them, so they disposed of her body. Kevin told me he also had already reported this to police, so I was hoping Detective Koontz could confirm whether or not this was looked into.
Yeah, I know he's given us some information, and something led us to look at, you know, that crowd of people. So I have to check if it was specifically from that person, but I know, you know, there's all sorts of stories around. I think there were some other females that, you know, we were told we should look into to see if they're, you know, kind of some people who are in the same kind of vulnerable, you know, involved in the drug use, and that may have been victims of his, or kind of, you know, people that had been possibly taken advantage of by him. But we really haven't never gotten cooperation from, you know, the females we did talk to, other than to see that, yes, they were obviously alive in the California type of thing. But I would have to check on the, whether we had some specific.
Okay.
But I know, you know, we did some definite, follow-up on related to, him. But nothing that ever, you know, came to fruition. I know there were some individuals who had tried to tell some people, like, on the state, that they left the state, and I know ultimately there was nothing definite. I mean, we did some definite legwork and follow-up and, you know, collected some evidence, and just nothing that ever, a very good possibility that she, you know, overdosed in someone for, you know, purposes of just not wanting to, you know, potentially get in trouble if they were, you know, given the drugs, if they were doing the drugs with her. That's certainly, I would say, high on the probability list of what could have happened, you know. But again, without looking at her remains, if that's the case, it's hard to even speculate until we get to that point, you know. But that certainly would be the, you know, again, due to her, you know, her lifestyle and some of the people she was involved with, that's a very likely scenario, something we certainly have to look at, you know.
Okay.
You know, again, some of the people we have talked to, you know, like I said, have given us their versions of events, and if we locate her, that could, you know, maybe prove some of that stuff wrong. You know, the information people have given us, you know, could affect, you know, show someone to be not as truthful as maybe we thought they were initially, or that kind of stuff. But
okay.
Yeah, but I could say that, I mean,
definitely, certainly hasn't focused on one individual. There's, like I said, there's a few people who potentially could be involved. It's just there's not a whole lot, obviously, without locating her. It's kind of one of those, just no contact sense. And again, which leads us to believe she's no longer alive. And, but just without her being located, it kind of, we don't even, like I mentioned earlier, it wouldn't shock me if she just, died of an overdose and someone just, disposed of the body to for their own purposes and everything. But obviously the longer it takes to locate her, the less chance of getting something as far as cause of death, which is always a big thing. But obviously the main thing would be to locate her for, a start anyways.
Okay.
We exchanged contact info, and he let me know he'd be taking our conversation back to Jeanette's case file to review it with fresh eyes, and that he'd follow up to provide more details on the things I asked if he could. I was grateful to have finally found someone in law enforcement who was willing to give their time and attention, even if limited.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
After talking with Detective Kuntz, I wanted to start digging into areas that the investigators may have missed, since it seemed that their efforts still hadn't produced anything promising. And at that point, I was still having no luck tracking down Neil. But something Detective Kuntz mentioned after I asked him about Neil had already started steering my next direction. It was when he was explaining that none of the people known to have contact with her on the day she disappeared have necessarily been ruled out. But he went on to specify that both of those individuals have been spoken to by law enforcement.
Anyone who could say, yes, I spoke to her today or I saw her today type of deal. Yeah, there's more than one person. And we've spoken to both those people, and we couldn't certainly rule out anybody.
Both was the word that caught my attention. With Neil being one of those, and assuming that Marcus didn't really fit the context here as the second individual, that left me wondering, who was the other person that spoke with her that day? Was it perhaps the person on the other end of the call that she took on Marcus's iPad? It seemed likely.
Holy shit. And I started thinking back, and I talked to her that night on my instant messenger.
Yeah, because I remember she got paperwork, the family tried suing her when we were in basic, and I had to go with her. So when you're in basic, you can't go anywhere by yourself, especially if you're a female.
That's next time on Unconvicted. This podcast is actively being produced at the time of its release, which means new information is being added daily. If you know anything regarding the disappearance of Jeanette Sierra Mella, please contact the Wayne County Sheriff's Department at 315-946-9711 or Clyde PD at 315-923-3121. If you have any information relevant to Jeanette's case or the things discussed on this podcast and would like to share for future episodes, you can find links to our social media and contact info in the show notes, as well as photos and links to our sources. Unconvicted is written, recorded, edited, and produced by me, Amanda Vreeland. Thank you for listening.